Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 90 for November 16th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial. How do you read? When I engage with media generally, and tech specifically, the task I feel I've been assigned is comprehension. I take works with complicated, interesting ideas and make sure that I can say, aha, yes, I see what you've done there, sir. If I can wrap my head around an interesting theory, pulling something I like out of it, I feel accomplished. But how do I choose these texts? What makes them attractive to me? Why do I pull certain ideas out and not others? In one example of this, I'll take a critique of science. I find science to be abhorrent. Thus, whenever I look and find a text which provides either an anti-science narrative or an ever more nuanced critique of science, I can say, look, they totally killed science, bro. It's done. End of story. I can show that I've understood the text, and I don't even have to put any effort into understanding ideas outside of what I already find attractive. I'm not saying this is bad, but I am finding it increasingly uninteresting and want something different, something that is, for me, new. I found that what I am interested in is the betrayal of what I already know and already enjoy. So what does this betrayal look like? How can I come to texts in a way that destroys me and my ideas rather than helps them to grow? One example I recently remembered involves an exercise of wearing many different ideological hats or spectacles, or pince-nez even. You take a familiar text, and before even beginning to dive in, you throw on an uncomfortable hat. This could be a second-wave feminist hat, a class struggle hat, a techno-optimist hat, an anarcho-liberal hat, whatever feels the most uncomfortable. Once firmly attached and screwed on, attack the text while inhabiting that character, while filling that hat. Find ways to destroy the text. Rip apart what you previously found agreeable. Find points of agreement that you would normally see as repulsive. Take a text that you find abhorrent, and through the magic of this character acting, find what makes it attractive to others. See if there is any wild interpretation or purposeful misinterpretation that could make it attractive to you. The hope I have for myself with this method is to come at texts not as a consumer chewing up ideas and shitting out understanding, but instead in naive a frame of reference as possible. To take ideas not as they refer to the supposed unified self I've got going on, but to any number of framings that might show me something I hadn't thought of before. Now I actually have to go and try this after many years of lapsed practice, so I'll let you know how it goes. Sorry for being so short. Bye-bye! Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. Read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book.
What's new this week? Take your pick, law or freedom, from CrimeThink. Anyone who has been paying attention recently has probably noted that CrimeThink is doing three strong things in their anarchist writing. One, they continue to have great connections internationally, no doubt based on the years of traveling that one of their longest-term members did with a hardcore band. They have maintained and fostered those relationships and put them to extensive use, which gets us stay-at-home types access to more voices than we would otherwise hear. Two, they do history pieces that are sometimes helpful in a way that is at least one step beyond Wikipedia. Three, they continue to argue against democracy, in spite of all the other pro-activist, pro-organizing backsliding they have done since more inspirational days. Arguing against democracy when one is interacting with normies is challenging, if not hideously depressing. Really? People can watch the Foucault versus Chomsky clip and come away thinking Chomsky is cool? Really? And it is also sound anarchist practice, if one wants to maintain a distinct anarchist voice in the morass that is always popular politics. So, this article is obviously in that last category, inspired by a protester, probably in the actions spurred by the resignation of Sessions, a protester who carries a sign saying, quote, I heart laws, unquote. This piece, garnished with photos of self-satisfied white liberals smiling for the camera, is a fun read and ends with the slogan, don't celebrate the exception, abolish the rule. Catchy, but I need to think about that more. I might prefer celebrate the exception and abolish the rule. But of course, that's more confusing.
Never turn off the phone, a new approach to security culture, from Anonymous, as behooves an essay on security, I guess. As with most articles about security, it's hard to know, unless you already know, whether the info is good or not, especially when it's from an anonymous source on the internet. Our enemies are perfectly capable of spreading disinformation anonymously on anarchist sites. However, this sounds not only reasonable, but like a helpful kick in the pants to better understand and work around surveillance. This article discusses, in non-technical language, things like metadata and patterns of behavior and how people are actually monitored, since of course our enemies have adapted to encryption and moved beyond needing to read actual words. The basic message is keep to the patterns that can be monitored technologically, even if you're breaking your routine. Read for details that will help you do that.
A Complete Idiot's Guide to the Imaginary Party, from the Transmetropolitan Review. Alex Garayan wrote a piece on the Anvil that was both critical and appreciative of Tikkun and the various texts affiliated with them. Reading that piece will tell you more than this well-written, but not especially well-reasoned, article, which sounds like a branding exercise to organize everyone who doesn't want to be organized. Much like the infuriating slogan, "Rest in Power," which politicizes the dead who can no longer speak for themselves and shouldn't need to, claiming everyone who didn't vote in the U.S. 2016 elections as members of this imaginary party is a quick way to rile some of us up. Taken as a piece of art, though, divorced from practicality, it's fun, with mentions of quantum physics, personal experience, political history, etc., all braided together into an attempt to hypnotize. Quote, according to this spherical schema of rebellion, everything that contributes to the maintenance of the old representation left-right belongs in the enemy camp. In other words, those who deny that the imaginary party exists are part of the enemy camp, and exist apart from the sphere with no polarities on its surface. The old binary of left and right with its respective parties are abstractions that exist only in places like Wall Street, the White House, Google headquarters, and the Pentagon. None of these entities can acknowledge their true opponent. All they can talk about is the fight against terrorism, delinquency, extremism, and criminality, since it is constitutionally forbidden to explicitly mention the existence of the imaginary party. Unquote. Yep. Not mentioning the imaginary party proves it exists. Yep.
In November, we remember those who gave everything, from Black Rose Federation by Tariq Khan et al. This article is a history of four preceding November 11ths throughout U.S. history by someone carefully and repeatedly identified as a veteran. I guess to preclude people patriot-shaming this anarchist writer or anarchist website? Who knows? Anyway, it's about as relevant as history usually is. Thumbnail sketches about how bad things were, and the badness of celebrating militarism, which I don't think is what the celebrators call it, but what do I know? I don't talk to them. Quote, so here we are at another November 11th, with a white nationalist head of state massing troops at the already hyper-militarized border as a political ploy to intimidate asylum seekers, and we're supposed to celebrate militarism? Thank the veterans of U.S. invasions and occupations for their service to this blood-stained empire. Veterans Day is a patriotic erasure of state violence and people's struggle. Rather than celebrate militarism, take a moment this November 11th to remember the martyrs of the Social Revolution. Nat Turner, Louis Ling, Albert Parsons, August Spies, George Engel, Adolf Fischer, Wesley Everest, and all those whose lives have been stolen by the violence of the state and reactionary vigilantes. Unquote.
Anathema, Volume 4, Issue 10, released. 12 pages. This issue has notice about plainclothes cop activity, Proud Boys activity, really interesting information about the trial resulting from a prison strike in Smyrna, Delaware. The quotations by prisoners are pretty amazing. The vandalism against some statues in Philly, deforestation and international activity around it, the multiple meanings and results of attack. An abridged excerpt from Backwoods called An Invitation to Desertion, and a checklist of things you might have done instead of voting. While this issue is heavier on the general, publications like this that are a mix of local, national, and international issues seem like a good idea for any location.
The bike-based anarchist public health project that's keeping people alive on Olympia's streets. From the liberal radio site KNKX, quote, your connection to jazz, blues, and NPR news, unquote. While obviously anarchists are involved in this project, even foundational, there's nothing to suggest that there's anything anarchist about the project, other than the name's inclusion of the Emma. This is a harm reduction project that gets some support from the government, just like most nonprofits do, and runs entirely on volunteer labor, like many nonprofits wish they could do. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking this project, I'm just saying, mutual aid is not the same as charity, right? So where exactly is the anarchy? But that's normal for mainstream coverage. Moving on.
Rebel City, Issue 9, is out. London's anarchist paper, quote unquote. The big comic on the front page suggests that, quote, the power of the people is greater than that of the people in power, unquote, which is, sadly, about what one has to expect from anarchy in the land of freedom.uk. Ah, yes. And the next quote, after the coy invitation to look inside for more, is about fascism. It's by Fred Hampton, who was amazing, though definitely not an anarchist, but come on. The homey aesthetic of this is sort of charming, and it's definitely a mix of super local and international, but the politics are just as leftist as can be. Quote, Rebel City aims to cover all issues of importance to working-class Londoners. We argue for a radical transformation of our city. 16 pages of quality anarchist reporting and analysis. Get it at Housewinds and Freedom Bookshops, your local social centers, or from a friendly anarchist on the street. Unquote. Definitely don't ask an unfriendly anarchist. Just saying.
The Local Kids, Issue 2, Autumn 2018, 20 pages. This is a collection, mostly translations from French and German, of pieces that are thoughtful and personal, with implications for action, but no exhortations. Titles like Without Victory Nor Defeat, Disturbing Public Peace, Experiment, Hiding Behind Words, Language Between the World and Me, The Struggle is Over or Everything Continues, etc. These are writings that speak to deeper experiences of being out of sync with the world as it is supposed to be, and perhaps awareness of the world as it is, more or less. Quote, in the constant crisis management trapped between work, stress, and leisure industry, everyone learns to find a way to deal with their own emotional crippling. The church consoles us with a paradise waiting for us and offers us a community of faith and traditional values and rights that offer us a bit of support. And even more modern is the spiritual trend that finds its expression in esoterica and meditation, yoga or Zen Buddhism mania, and wants to let you know that you can be happy in any circumstances, no matter what your life situation. Unquote. This is a piece that reminds us that the current situation doesn't mean a good life even for the privileged. We all suffer in the modern world.
Bonds, Not Ballots, from It's Going Down, a brief personal account of faith in human relationships when the weather and the politicians and the bureaucrats are against us. Quote, a just recovery and a just transition are necessities for our collective survival. Now is the time to experiment with ways of living that give us the flexibility and freedom to do what we know needs to be done. Now is the time to gain practical skills and knowledge that can be used to further people's survival in crisis and beyond. Unquote.
What's new with LBC? November 2018 update from Little Black Cart. The quarterly update on new titles, in this case, The Totality is Incomplete by Alex Garayan, and the latest controversy, which is that the Seattle Anarchist Book Fair organizers, a group of newbies who have been swayed by some social cred-wielding activists, have rejected LBC from attending the book fair this year. The fun part of this What's New is a meme contest for best response to this rejection. Check the participants at anokchan.org #SABF. Try your hand!
Italy, a communique from deported anarchist prisoner David Delugu from Sardinia, from Act for Freedom. This is a long communique from David on trial for an attempted escape from a prison in Sardinia. David is currently serving an 18-year sentence. Quote, as we know, this trial was blocked for a year by the director of prison administration, who was trying and failed to impose it via video conference, thus abusing this emergency measure in order to chain me in the role of helpless hostage of insidious and prevaricating technology, to weaken a prisoner's will, depersonalize him, for those who don't resist, tire him out, isolate him from solidarity and his loved ones, silence refractory tension and resignation, in particular, the struggle against prison, a struggle that has never ceased to exist, in spite of everything. These are the same emergency measures with which I've been caged in the prison cesspits of Sicily for years, deported as a repressive consequence for the struggle carried out in the prison of Buoncomino, with the application of special regimes, including the extreme confinement through Article 14-BIS, regimes exercised with ferocious arbitrariness and perverse Zionist methods, so as to crush a prisoner morally and physically, and with him his original struggle, which nevertheless they couldn't stop, as he is alive, an incorrigible and untamable individuality, not subjected to prison alienation annihilation. And on the contrary, they feed more anger, contempt, and determination in facing and fighting the white torture of continuous and total isolation in this case. Unquote. There seem to be some problems or challenges with this translation.
Russian anti-fascist reveals violence, humiliation, and threats in pre-trial detention from opendemocracy.net.
I expect this is only the beginning of the Russian increase in repression, nominally in response to the bombing of one of their offices. Quote, Yuli Boyarshinov, an anti-fascist industrial climber and free market organizer from St. Petersburg, was arrested on January 21, 2018. Boyarshinov later stated that city police officers beat him after he refused to answer their questions, citing his right not to incriminate himself. 400 grams of gunpowder were then discovered in his possession. On January 23rd, a district court ordered his arrest for 30 days on an explosives possession charge. Boyarshinov was then visited by two FSB agents who listed the names of defendants in the network case and promised that if he did not talk, it would get worse. After he refused to talk, he was transferred to pretrial detention center number 6 at Gorilovo in the outskirts of St. Petersburg. On April 11, 2018, Boyarshinov was officially accused of being a member of a terrorist organization, unquote. This is by no means the extent of how they are torturing this prisoner, who apparently is getting special hostile attention. There's no info on how to support these folks, and Yuli in particular, but if you go to rupression.com/en/, then there are links, addresses, and suggestions.
Audio, Anarchy Radio, November 13th, 2018. An hour, Kath and co-hosts. This episode starts with some rants about gun violence and the inadequacy of current political responses, identified as the significant range between thoughts and prayers to gun control. The co-hosts were not articulate about what they were suggesting was actually to blame, but one can presume that it's civilization. Otherwise, someone might be excited that Rhea calls in to promote a book and reads a long quote.
The Hotwire number 44, November 7th, 2018. 36 minutes. This episode starts out with a mockery of arguments that anarchists have heard about why we should vote, including my favorite canard, this election is the most important ever, which segues smoothly into an actual debate about the importance of not voting. This is a really good use of this podcast, I think. There are actual conflicts that CrimeThink is smart enough and has the resources to address, and as long as they don't fake some unity at the end of these play acts, then they get my thumbs up. Aside from that, too much Trump and too much Democrats and Republicans. I guess when there is so much leeway among people who call themselves anarchists, these kinds of episodes that range from not actually anarchists to Anarchy 101 to Anarchy 301 topics are appropriate. Sigh. This episode does claim Garrido as an anarchist, so perhaps that will silence some of the complaints or at least redirect them.
The Hotwire number 45, November 14th, 2018. 45 minutes. California fires, prison labor, anti-electoral rants, anti-racist protests, Tucker Carlson protest, David Frum and Steve Bannon protests, etc., etc., etc. According to the range set up in the previous entry of non-anarchist to actually anarchist to sophisticated anarchist, this episode would be on the non to barely anarchist part of that continuum. For example, the hosts act exercised that media pundits lie. Shocking. This is a longer episode because they read at length from the article Take Your Pick, Law or Freedom, mentioned earlier in this E-News podcast.
Lights, tacos, action. Franklin Lopez on the future of radical film from It's Going Down. 57 minutes. Quote, in our conversation, we talk about what all went into the recent episode of Trouble, which focused on the fight to defend the J20 defendants, as well as the next episode, which will center on looking at mental health from an anarchist perspective. We then talk about the future of the popular sub.media character, Stim, as well as what fans can be expecting for upcoming sub.media projects in 2019. We also touch on the future of anarchist media, people combining efforts, and the growth of local projects and websites. We end by talking about what has been going down across so-called Canada, as well as the situation in Puerto Rico, which Frank spoke to the last time he was on the program. Unquote. That doesn't sound to me like the future of radical film. Perhaps I missed something?
Free Radical Radio Books Podcast, The Unique and Its Property by Max Stirner, A Close Reading, Part 3, 29 minutes, a dramatic reduction in length for this episode, which is a recording of three good friends, Shit, Fear, Christianity, etc., a parade of authors Rydra has read, from Kundera to Delaney to Derrida, etc.
I'm different, don't care who knows it, something about me, it's not the same, yeah, I'm different, that's how it goes. Ain't gonna play your goddamn game.
Topic of the week, anonymity. Anonymity has been valued by anarchists as a means of hiding from the state and the law-abiding masses since its origins. Something which is manifest today, though, practices classified under security culture, anonymous claims to clandestine actions published on anarchist websites, the adoption of pen names or keeping one's name off of one's writings, all things which have been aided by the rise of the internet. For the anarchist, anonymity can offer both cover from the eyes of the government and one's employer, and the ability to say or do otherwise unsayable or undoable things without suffering social sanctions. Yet, at the same time, there are people who put a lot of stock in not being anonymous, at least not all the time. The reasons for this are many. A desire to own one's actions and ideas, to connect with others by putting a name and a face on what does, and even to achieve some level of fame. Openness is something which has also been aided by the internet. We are now more reachable than ever by anyone with internet access, but has also been weaponized as a tool of oppression by state, capital, and those who aid the work of the state through no platforming and doxing. Anonymity may come with its own costs, alienation from one's potential allies, a fragmented life in which one feels they can't realize their politics in any but discrete spaces, to name a few. But the costs of openness can range from the tyranny of the crowd as a visible enemy to one's livelihood, and relationships being endangered by the access one's enemies can have to damaging personal information. How much value do you place in anonymity in your own life and projects? Do you generally favor anonymity or openness in your projects, and why?
Yeah. Well, I think what comes to my mind reading this or listening to this is that there's like the third category of pseudonyms.
Which is, they sort of mention it as the same thing, but I actually think that ongoing pseudonyms are an important distinct category.
Yeah, it's kind of like the middle ground in a way. You're kind of an anonymous and kind of, you know, a regular, consistent person. So, yeah. And so in a way, like, I kind of object to this false dichotomy.
Yeah. Well, how expand a little bit on what you think the distinction is.
Oh, yeah. For me, for example, right? As you know, for a long time, I went by the pseudonym name Yanok Tichai. And by writing, you know, under that name and, you know, meeting people using that name, I had a lot of people that, you know, got to know me, and I developed somewhat of a reputation for myself. And so in a way, like, it definitely spilled into my regular life, you know, in many ways. You know, I was Yanok, that is, yeah. But then that still was very, you know, separate and distinct from my legal name, which I kept separate and, in a way, it was almost like two separate personalities, you know? My legal name, when I used that and introduced myself, you know, that way, I was totally boring, normal, straight-laced guy. But then with the pseudonym, you know, that's when people really knew me as, like, a, you know, radical anarchist guy. And so, yeah, I mean, so, yeah, so in a way, it's separate, you know? I kind of, you know, almost like a somewhat of a separate personality, but then also... That was who I was, you know. So, yeah. So I know I would say pseudonyms are kind of the middle ground in a way.
Well, I think fundamentally this is a question about what are you doing here and what kind of relationship do you want to have to the anarchist space.
Yeah. Oh, that's a much bigger question. Yeah.
Yeah, because the choice to be anonymous is also a choice to sort of be alone, isolated.
Yeah.
And to basically really, you know, not necessarily have any friction in the anarchist space. This was really apparent to me when I went to Greece, and pretty much the entire Greek space not only knows each other, but knows each other's families.
Oh, wow.
And so while there is obviously an anonymous side to anarchist activity, it's basically like a separate feature to knowing each other's names. And, you know, I will say that there's a good 10% of anarchist people who are fairly consistently in my life who I have no idea what their name is. And that really doesn't exist in the Greek anarchist space. If you're in the Greek anarchist space, you know everybody's names, but you don't necessarily do most of your activity, you know, under your personal name.
Yeah, yeah.
So that distinction between social and, yeah.
Yeah. And so do you think, like, nowadays, at least in the U.S., like, more people are doing stuff under anonymity or pseudonyms, and, like, it's becoming less and less the case that people are using their regular, you know, real, so-called real names or legal names for anything?
Well, I think the distinction is both an and rather than either or, yeah. Because I think that in the early days of internet anarchism, a lot of people had consistent names all the time. You know, Chucko being like a classic example. But prior to the internet, you know, it was letter writing and newspapers, and most of the newspapers still had either pseudonyms or anonymous authorship.
Yeah, or pen names. Yeah, for authors. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Wolfie Landstreicher is a name that predates the internet, as an example.
Oh yeah, and the whole in his case, the whole series of different pseudonyms, like Carl Fun and such.
Yeah, which, you know, again, is very playful and sort of fun.
Yeah. And so would you say, like, in his case, like, that his ideas changed under the different pseudonyms?
I think for him that was the idea. But, you know, he has changed names since Wolfie and still writes under Wolfie, which is, you know, so, and most of what he writes under Wolfie is his translations.
Yeah.
So that's sort of an interesting thing. But all of his original writing right now is all under his new name, Apio Lude.
Yeah, and so in a way, it's almost like similar to the way you have like different screen names for different accounts and, yep. You know,
right.
Logging in, and then you do your different thing under that name.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is fairly nice.
Yeah, yeah. And so...
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So in a way, like, I view all these things, like pseudonyms, anonymity, and using your legal name, they all have, you know, advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, I would say you just, you know, which one you choose just depends on what you're trying to accomplish and stuff. And
yeah, of course.
Yeah. Because I've definitely have like done some like anonymous comments on aid news. And part of that is almost like more like just laziness, not wanting to log in, but wanting to say something quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess to treat the question as like a serious question that, you know, we should be thinking about or whatever, you know, the way it's framed at the very end, how do you value being anonymous in your own life and projects? Well, I think in my own life, I absolutely don't value it at all. And mostly in projects, that's also true. But those two things actually don't encompass most of how people experience anarchism.
Oh, yeah. But how would you say most people experience it then?
Well, I think that making a quick comment on an A-News thread is how most people experience it. In other words, they experience it as like an end user who can walk away at any time and you know, who might have some sort of input or something, but it's not like an ever-present thing. Because, you know, part of the thing about creating a consistent pseudonym is you have to actually put some thought into it. What does it mean? How to be careful about, you know, making sure that you do it consistently, you know, and that's more thinking, I think, than a lot of people necessarily do, you know, other than if they're truly outraged or engaged or something.
Yeah. And a consistent pseudonym requires like commitment to keep on returning to it.
Right.
And having that live on.
And so you changed. You had a consistent pseudonym, and now you mostly use your legal name, which you don't need to say here, but yeah. Why did you make that change?
Yeah. Well, I think that almost, for me, like a much greater thing of just getting burned out or not feeling as like passionate the proselytizer for the anarchist revolutionary cause, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just getting like kind of disgusted and not really having faith in the anarchist scene and not really believing that that will accomplish positive change or change in the world. So kind of abandoning the pseudonym was this a part of the whole change in my life of just being like, you know, fuck it. I'm not going to be investing my time and energy in this. Yeah. And but also like in a way, not believing in it as much, you know, you could throw out that N word nihilist, you know, maybe there was some nihilism in, you know, that crept into me with that change.
But you still pay a lot of attention.
Yeah, yeah. Because then I found out, you know, even after making this change, you know, I'm still an anarchist. You know? Yeah, like just because you don't believe in the anarchist scene or subculture for making a revolution doesn't mean that you suddenly start believing in authority and the state and all that stuff. Mm.
And so you just don't have an audience of people who want to talk about what you want to talk about other than in the place where you used to be.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And as far as like, yeah, what you just said, the kind of things I would like to talk about, but don't have an audience for, like one is, you know, my idealized version of anarchy would be where, would be people having this deep, heartfelt, personal connection with one another and a great degree of trust and sharing and all that kind of stuff. And if that kind of thing were to be actualized, then there would be no anonymity at all. It'd be exact opposite, where people would really deeply know and understand each other and be right. In deep, ongoing conversation with one another.
How would the internet change for you in that vision?
Oh, yeah, I think, so this is all kind of idealized, sci-fi fantasy land. But like, so ideally, the internet would be, people would be having open, honest, sharing, heartfelt conversations on the internet, which I think it happens nowadays, but just in this, you know, tiny little margins here and there, not the shit show that the internet is mainly nowadays, but yeah. And also like coordination, sharing information, you know, doing that in a kind of good faith manner.
So you just want people to be nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice and gentle, loving, caring. Yeah. Like the exact opposite of kind of how we view the anarchist scene now.
Well, not just the anarchist scene, but really like social life.
Oh, entirely. Yeah, humanity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a your aspirations are higher and bigger than mine are.
Part of also, you know, the change I've had in the last, you know, 10 or whatever years, right, is like it's the aspirations, it's what I would like to see the anarchist scene become and the world become, but then at the same time not really believing it's gonna happen.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's the whole thing, yeah, having the beautiful idea and not having any belief or faith that it's going to happen. Yeah, well, it's almost the same kind of thing of situation as being like a sci-fi nerd, you know, you think about and envision these beautiful new societies and worlds and you realize that, yeah, you just live in a hellscape instead. But not a cool dystopian hellscape, but kind right. of, you know, the working 9-to-5 hellscape.
Yeah. I also, of course, this vision that you're talking about, which is, of course, also a vision that I talk about, does seem to map to entering middle age.
Oh, yeah.
Like having, you know, big dreams earlier on. With secret identities and all the rest. And then at a certain threshold, being like, wait, every day I'm just going to work and, you know, coming home to one person who understands me and who I can talk to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's such a different experience of life, I would say, as well. Earlier in my 20s, having that passion where I would meet complete strangers and just like strike up a conversation of like, oh, have you heard about anarchism? Let me tell you about anarchy. You know? Yeah. And now I just don't have that in me. Yeah. And it kind of changes how you experience the world if you don't feel like you have this beautiful thing that you want to share with people. Kind of like how Christian missionaries of sharing Jesus and all that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And do you think that the... Your particular, like, how you were raised is why you had that particular urge?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, because I might have told you before how I was raised in the religion, the Baha'i faith. And that's a pretty small religion, but it's worldwide. And they have big aspirations as well about changing the world and humanity. And the Baha'is, they say, ultimately, you have one world government and no nations, you know, all be together, no division on racial and ethnic lines. And it'd be this whole new world. And, you know, I was raised with this belief and this message that, you know, you need to do your part to contribute to the whole spiritual change of humanity. You know, this is your mission as a Baha'i. And I went to these summer camps where I was trained, you know, to, you know, do God's work in that way.
Yeah. Anarchism was not a big jump.
Yeah. Yeah. And so basically, yeah, that's what happened in my teenage years is I rejected that religious indoctrination and but kept the same mentality of like changing the whole world in this beautiful way. And for me, that was just changed from the Baha'is to the anarchist, you know, from B to A.
Thank you very much for this conversation.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, this podcast was sound edited by Din. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Din. The editorial was written by Din. We thank Aragorn and Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.